Council, just some housekeeping while you're setting up. 15 minutes each as far as your arguments, and an additional 5 minutes is reserved for rebuttal to appellant counsel. The podium's been going up and down all day, so please feel free to adjust it to whatever your height calls for. And appellant counsel, when you're ready to proceed, you may approach the podium.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel. Britton Weimer representing the appellants in this case. As you know, this is an appeal from summary judgment in favor of respondent One Way, dismissing all claims against One Way. The underlying case, as you know, Minor Geist was injured 5 years ago, 2014, when climbing a pine tree at his grandparents, the Trams. He was shocked by power from ECE wires going through the tree. Now, ECE had a vegetation management contract with One Way. Under the contract, basically One Way was responsible for pruning trees to keep them away from ECE wires. Guy sued One Way and ECE for negligence in pruning the tree. And then ECE cross-claimed against One Way in for contribution and indemnity based upon One Way's negligence. So the claims of both Geist and ECE against One Way are based upon negligence. So that's the issue before the court on appeal. And that's the issue that the trial court granted summary judgment on, negligence against One Way. The trial court improperly granted summary judgment for One Way, ignoring numerous material fact issues about One Way's negligence. In particular, we, that is Geist and East Central Energy, presented abundant lay and expert testimony on three areas of negligence by One Way. First, inadequate pruning around the lower or neutral wire. Second, inadequate pruning around the upper or primary wire. And third, failing to follow up with the Trams, the property owners, to remove the tree. Any one of these three is sufficient to deny summary judgment.
And yet well, Mr. Weimer, where is the expert testimony that alleges One Way violated the applicable standard of care?
Good question, Your Honor. Ron May, who was the only expert, and we submitted an expert affidavit, we being ECE.
Well, by God, you got what you pay for, because he certainly said you didn't cause the accident. But where in that affidavit is testimony by Mr. May, that One Way violated the applicable standard of care?
Well, it may take me a second to find them all, but he talks about it multiple places with respect to all three of these issues. He talks about let's see here. This is a lengthy affidavit. For example, on addendum 18, paragraph 4, near the end, he's talking about the failure to prune both with the upper and lower wires, called the conductors, so that within the 6-year period, it was still more than 2 feet away. And he says, photographs taken after the accident clearly show the neutral conductor travels through the canopy of the trees and is closer than the 2-foot clearance required by the contract.
Right, but I mean, here we're not concerned with is it fair to say, this is a negligence case, therefore the key is what is the standard of care relating to pruning these trees as to what the contract says? Because if the contract said, you can wait 10 years before you prune the next tree, who cares? I mean, it's the standard of care is you got to prune them, whatever it is. I don't know, every 6 years within 2 feet. So where in that, and I assume this is the only expert affidavit that's in the record?
Yes, by any party.
So where is the expert where in this affidavit would I find, well, here's the standard of care that applies to tree trimming, and here's where One Way violated that standard of care?
So a little earlier in that paragraph, in my opinion.
So what, now what, I have your brief.
So it's addendum 18.
18.
And this is line four. In my opinion, One Way exercised poor judgment and breached the contract and contractual standard of care when pruning the tree limit issue in this case in 2010.
But that's the whole point. This was in 2010. One Way had a contract with ECE. It didn't have a contract with the landowner. So they're done in 2010. They can't come back on the land and decide they want to do something that's a finished project. I mean, this is, I haven't asked a question. Let me ask you a question. It appears to me that you've alleged a breach of contract between One Way and ECE, and you're saying that that breach is relevant to your tort action, but don't you have to establish a separate duty independent of any breach of tort action? Doesn't case law require that you do that?
As I perceive, there's maybe a couple of questions in there. One, so I'll do my best to answer those. First, with a professional negligence claim, you frequently have contractual components to the standard of care. So you, an expert has to opine both as to the particular contract provisions and as to what you could say are universal standard of care
That's
concerns.
That's right, but now this appeal is only related to One Way and its dismissal summarily from any responsibility, negligent responsibility to your client.
Right, to the clients.
So what I'm trying to build is that pathway that you are suing One Way under a tort theory, and I can't determine what duty One Way would have to your client under any tort theory.
Well, so so I represent both ECE and Geist. So perhaps you're asking as to Geist?
Well, either or. I mean, well, the contract is done, and to go back and I can't imagine ECE is going to say, yeah, go ahead and come back.
Well, the substance of the expert opinion is that it was the duty of, or the obligation of the standard of care, both under the contract and industry practices, for One Way to prune in 2010, anticipating the reasonable growth of the particular tree. And in other words, it wasn't the duty of necessarily One Way to come back every year or whatever. Their duty was to exercise their professional judgment as vegetation management company to prune it sufficiently so that after 6 years, it's still at least 2 feet away from the wire. And that's what Ron May goes through. He says it's not simply a matter, it's their professional judgment. That's what they're being paid for is, okay, we're vegetation management professional. We understand trees, how they grow. We understand the type of tree, we understand the weather and other things, and so for this tree to be at least 2 feet away at the end of the six-year period, in our opinion, we have to prune it back 10 feet, or whatever it is. They're the professionals, and EC hires them to use their professional judgment. Ron May talks about that frequently, to anticipate what's reasonably likely to happen to the branches during that period of time. And Ron May also says that it's ECE, their job is to hire the contractor, that is One Way. It's One Way's job to manage the vegetation. That is, how far do you prune back the tree, 10 feet, 12 feet, 9 feet, whatever, the particular branch, so that after 6 years, it's going to be at least 2 feet away.
But now you're talking about the issue of foreseeability, and the district court didn't issue any ruling on foreseeability. I mean, is it foreseeable that in 6 years, this stuff would have sprawled out all over?
Well, the foreseeability, the district court's order was deficient in many ways. For example, as to Geist, they short-circuited a lot of the stuff by just saying there's no privity of contract between Geist and one way. You know, there's, Geist was not a party to the contract, so that's the end of my decision. It's like, well, no, I mean, this is reviewed de novo on appeal. There's plenty of evidence that is foreseeable that, and it's the job of one way to determine, hey, is this going to grow? Is this going to grow to within 2 feet? And the, according to Ron May, he opines that based on the photographs taken shortly after the accident, the photographs that everyone was looking at, according to the photographs, both the pruning around both lines was inadequate because both of them were closer than 2 feet. And the lower one, the neutral, was inches away. And so, and this is getting back to Judge Connolly's question, concludes at the end of paragraph 4, thus one way's noncompliance with the contract and contractual standard of care directly contributed to Mr. Geist's injuries. So that's the final sentence in paragraph 4 there on ADD 18. So now I hope, Your Honor, I've addressed your main concerns, but the analysis is a little different for Geist versus ECE, but at the core is the negligence of the party, the primary party, one way responsible for managing the trees. And what that means in this context is, as Mr. May explains, that they've got to use their professional judgment to figure out how far back to prune so that no one has to come for 6 years to prune back those branches so that they're well away so you don't have an accident like this happening. They've got to be, it's got to be more than enough to keep it 2 feet away. And in both cases, after 4 years, not 6 years, both wires, the branches were closer than 2 feet. At least that's the evidence. You know, that's how Mr. May saw the photographs. And that's evidence that was direct evidence before the trial court, and the trial court just ignored it. And so you have both the lower wire and the upper wire. There's expert testimony that they were both inadequately pruned. They're both closer than 2 feet. It's the duty, the obligation of one way to manage that so that they anticipate, you know, so that after 6 years, and this is only 4 years, after 6 years, it'll be more than 2 feet away. After 4 years, it was less than 2 feet away. In one case, it was just inches away, if not contacting the lower wire. So, and Mr. May also explains how the lower wire, even though it's a neutral wire, because it is right there on the branches, the way the accident happened is Minor Geist either touches the wire or he touches a branch that is touching the wire. Primary current goes through him, and it goes through his body, and it goes through into the neutral wire and returns immediately. Now, what would happen if the neutral wire had been pruned properly? It would not have gone through back through the neutral wire. It would have gone through the tree itself into the ground. That's how the circuit would have been completed. It would have been much less of a shock to Minor Geist than what happened. So that's the upper wire and the lower wire, the primary and neutral. Now they have a third issue of negligence, the contacting the trams. Now one way admitted that, hey, the thing to do is this is the kind of tree we need to take down. We put a ribbon on the subject tree for removal and left a note on the tram's door asking them to contact us. But one way doesn't recall following up. They don't recall calling the trams to follow up. They don't recall knocking on the tram's door to follow up. And they don't remember if the trams granted or refused permission to remove the tree. Now, what's the problem here? Well, Ron May, again, says it was the duty and obligation of wanting to follow up. If you're getting silence from the property owners, the trams, you have a duty to follow up. You know, it's an obvious problem. This tree is a mess. It needs to be taken down. You know it's a mess. You put a ribbon on the tree, and you get silence from the trams. Your duty under the standard of care is to follow up. You didn't do it. That's obviously a cause of the accident, because if the tree had been gone, this would never have happened. So, again, negligence, undisputed expert testimony, on the standard of care on all three. Now, one of the points I think in the couple of the court's questions here is the Ron May's expert affidavit. You know, does it touch on contract or industry standards? It does both. And we've cited the case law in professional negligence cases that frequently, if not most of the time, there's a contract between the professional and the client, and that is part, but not all, of the analysis needed for the standard of care, is to look at the contract in the larger context of industry standards. So you need to have them both.
Your time has expired, but go ahead and sum up. You'll still have your 5 minutes for rebuttal.
All right, thank you, Your Honor. So you need there needs to be expert testimony on both, not just the contracts in by itself, but industry standards and how they relate to the contract and how the contract is significant from an industry standards standpoint. You need to have both. There is only one person, Ron May, who testified about that.
Good day, Your Honors. May it please the court. Peter Waldeck here on behalf of One Way Tree Services. I want to jump right into this because there were some questions asked on Mr. May's affidavit, and I think it really gets to the heart of this claim. What the district court found was that there was no evidence of any breach of any duty by One Way in this case, and the court decided that correctly. Plaintiff relies heavily on Mr. May's affidavit. The way I look at this case, I can identify three potential standards of care. Mr. May talks about the NESC, the National Electric Safety Code 218. He finds that ECE was in compliance with all of that. He finds that that's an industry standard, that's a set of codes, and it's okay to have branches, certain distances, or even in contact with wires. He found that there was no violation of that. So that 218 is not at issue here. There's no allegation that we violated that standard. The other standard is the required clearance sheet that my client was provided when they were told to go do their work. And these are the sheets that talk about the growth charts. And they were told that these are mandatory. You have to follow those. You have no discretion there. It is undisputed that we met those clearance requirements. I understand plaintiff's brief, or appellant's brief, I'm sorry, to indicate that there may be some question of that. To be clear, the ECE employees all have testified, or the relevant ones have testified unequivocally, that they were out there, they inspected this work, and that it passed. And I should put an asterisk on that. We know even specifically this work was inspected because on this exact property, there was a follow-up inspection sheet by ECE that found a dead branch on another tree. Now, that has nothing to do with this claim, but we had to go out there and take that dead branch out as well. But that is proof positive that they were out there, they inspected this, and that they knew. ECE is the one that puts together these standards, these guidelines, these specifications. Mr. Olson, ECE's employee, said, I have to know these specifications. It's my job to go out and make sure that they're met, and I did that in this case. So we know that the 218 is not a standard of care. There's no dispute that we violated that, and we know that these required pruning guidelines were not violated. I can find nowhere in Mr. May's affidavit where he establishes a negligent standard of care. Nowhere does he say, here is the industry standard and here is how One Way violated it, or here is how One Way could have satisfied it. At best, Mr. May gives the opinion that it's industry standard for companies like ECE to contract out this work and to rely on the contractors. And then he jumps to our contract, which has the 2 feet of clearance over a 6-year period of time. So I'm not quite sure where that falls. He's not identifying a unique or new standard of care in the industry. He really is just falling back on the contract itself, as we argue in our brief. The only claim they have is that it seemed to be this violation of 2 feet within 6 years, but what we know is Our work was inspected and paid for. Our work was entirely completed in 2010. We had no ability, no right, no way to go out there and do anything to the property. Had we gone out to this property and done any clearing, any pruning, that would have been trespass, that would have been damage to property, that would have been illegal. We had no right to do that. What we also know is in regards to standards of care and responsibility, we know ECE takes it upon themselves to not only inspect the work upon completion, but they have these routine maintenance line patrols, and those are on a 12 to 18 month basis. And we know that those were in fact performed, and we have the testimony from ECE that one of the reasons to do this is to look for these very things, to see if there's any dangers, any growth that is too much. There is no indication that they found any such problems on this property, and we know that they would have been to this property at a minimum every 12 to 18 months thereafter.
The growth on this particular tree, what kind of a tree was it?
White pine.
White pine?
White pine.
And which county is this in?
Is it Isani? It's up in Cambridge. I think it's Isani.
An area where white pines grow quickly.
You have me at an advantage there. I'm assuming they may. I would say this, what's interesting on that issue is ECE put together these required growth charts. And they said that they did these over a many year survey of the trees and that those have changed over time. And in fact, we know that the growth charts provided to us at the time of our work required different clearance than the current growth charts. The current growth charts require much more trimming of the white pines, and it was ECE's testimony that they came to observe over the course of years that the white pines grew faster than expected. So Your Honor may very well be correct, but the notion there is it's ECE that had the study, that had the survey, that put together these growth charts and said, you gotta follow them. We don't have any discretion on that. We followed those guidelines, and everybody at ECE agrees that we did. Nobody believes from ECE that we breached the contract. What ECE has done is they've gone and gotten Mr. May to write a multiple page report and affidavit that exonerates them from everything. However,
well, I mean, you know,
they got what they paid for. Well, sadly, I suppose that is the way it works.
You know, may I ask you this, Mr. Waldeck? So looking at Mr. May's affidavit,
yes.
This is in the appellant's brief, page 19, addendum 19, page 4. You know, as stated above, one way is obligated to use its independent professional judgment to meet the contractual requirement of pruning its trees so at the end of the 6-year cycle, 2 feet of clearance from the tree limbs to the conductors would exist. Why isn't that enough to both state a standard of care and state that it was violated?
Well, first of all, it doesn't state a standard of care as far as a negligence standard, right? He's, again, falling back simply on this contract, number one. Number two, it is EC's own opinions.
There is the sentence before that, you know, under, I agree. The affidavit isn't like one of the best I've ever seen, but above that it says, under utility industry practices, such pruning guidelines are a starting point for contractors such as One Way to use when exercising its professional judgment in pruning tree limbs. Are those two sentences enough to sort of get you to some standard of care and get you to some violation of it?
I don't think so, because I couldn't tell, as I sit here today, I couldn't tell you then what the standard is. Maybe we know what he thinks the starting point is, and we certainly know what the expert...
Well, the starting point is ECC sure as hell it didn't violate anything.
True.
I'm sure paragraph 12 was the first sentence that was written in this affidavit, but anyway.
I wouldn't be surprised. No, it's not enough. I've seen numerous expert opinions over the years on any number of things, and you go to those opinions, and it's very clear where they state, here would be the standard, you know, here's how it was violated. We don't see that anywhere. The only area we get anything concrete is where he opines concretely that 218 wasn't violated by ECE, and that's it. I think that this area is the crux of the appeal to the extent that there is one, and I just don't think that they've established a standard of care, and I think the evidence overwhelmingly shows that we met the standards of care. But out of concern that there's other issues raised, and I'm more than happy, obviously, to take questions, but then there's, obviously, we argued waiver, course of performance, and course of dealings. I think our brief speaks to that. I don't have anything more to add to that at this point other than to point it out. But I did want to hit on this following up with removing the tree, and I want to make sure that one point's very clear here, because I don't think that there's any evidence that we were negligent in that way whatsoever. But the representation is made that our people don't really remember following up. And in my way of understanding language is, sometimes people say, yeah, I don't really remember that happening. Like, I don't think that happened. That is not what we have here. Harlan Green testified very clearly. Here's what I do. I do remember putting a ribbon on that tree, and I remember pruning it, and I've been doing this for years, and in my mind, that can only lead to one conclusion, that I followed up, I notified them, and I got no feedback whatsoever, and so we just simply had to prune. To put it another way, any argument that we didn't follow up is pure speculation. It is just pure guess. It's simply a metaphysical possibility, I suppose, that it could have happened. I would suggest this also, and I don't know if it's important, but just understanding this case, this house where this tree was removed looks like a house. In fact, the plaintiff's mother grew up in the house. The Trams own that house. That was a family house. They run a business on the neighboring farm. These are both farm home properties. They moved they moved somewhere else and operate the business out of the neighboring property. That house, the business kept as a daycare, but it looks like a home, but it's operated as a daycare. So when we go put those hangers, and I'm sure your honors have all had hangers on their door, but when we put the hangers on and we do what we're told to do as far as follow up, we don't know this. We don't know that this is a daycare, that this isn't somebody coming and going every day. But I'm assuming that the reason we have a lack of information is because the property owner did get the follow up from us, but it was people working at the daycare and disregarded it or otherwise didn't pay attention to it. Granted, it's speculation on my point, but to the extent that it informs the judges here on kind of the context of this follow-up, it would be pure speculation to say that we did not adequately do our job as far as
follow-up. Your time is running out. Can you talk? I'm concerned that Judge Hilgis in this case didn't address the indemnification and the contribution claims that were made by ECE.
Sure, Your Honor. I think it's relatively simple and straightforward. First and foremost, when you look at the contract itself, to the extent we have any obligations, it's for the period of the contract, the period of the work. So this accident clearly happened many years after our contract was completed. So it's not a contract that anticipates indemnity or contribution on completed operations. Now that, there's kind of two arguments there. There's one of simple contractual interpretation that says this contract, you know, runs from during the period of the work. Then there's the secondary argument where if the court is inclined to believe that this is an improvement to real property and would fall under the 337 statute, then there's no concurrent insurance obligations for a completed operation.
But what I'm getting at is there's no ruling by the district court.
Well,
it says they're dismissed. The claims are dismissed.
I'm assuming, my understanding is, if we have no duty, then we could have no obligations to indemnify anyone. If we had no duty and breached no duty, how could we, an insurance company?
What you're arguing then to us is that the silence by the district court as far as its potential enumerated reasons is in fact to be treated as the denial.
Agreed. That's my understanding of there would be no reason to entertain these additional arguments. There's no duty. There's no breach of duty. And I think my brief lays out additional arguments to the extent that we need to get involved in that. This would be an indemnity agreement that, again, ECE drafted and is ambiguous and contradictory on its face and therefore should not be enforced. But, again, more to the point, it would not be an obligation that would fall to us at any time outside of the contractual period. I know I have some more time here, but I never miss an opportunity to be quiet. I've said everything I can. Unless there's any other questions, I'll waive. Thank you.
Thank you.
So just a couple of brief points. First of all, the Minnesota Supreme Court in the Montemayor case, it's on page 18 of our brief, says the moving party, one way, has the burden of showing an absence of factual issues. Well, they didn't meet that burden. They didn't present any expert testimony or any other evidence on any of the three issues that I've mentioned today, and that we briefed today. Secondly, it's clear, I mean, I think that Ron May's affidavit, even though it kind of covers a lot of issues, I think it's much, much more than enough, since it's undisputed, to establish what he says, which is that all the evidence points to one way's noncompliance with the contractual and contractual standard of care directly contributed to Mr. Geist's injuries. And he gives a number of reasons for that, including the risk of the neutral wire and the fact that both limbs were too close to both wires. In addition, he expressly says industry practices and the contractual specifications required Mr. Green, that's one way, to follow up with the property owners, the trams, to confirm whether they would cooperate with one way taking down the trees. I mean, it's as, I don't know how he could be any more clear and direct as that. That's on ADD 19, paragraph 7. So Mr. May has the only expert testimony. One way admits expert testimony is needed on the standard of care. They provided no expert testimony in the standard of care. We provided some, which I think is more than enough, but you can always second guess it. But for summary judgment, where one way has presented no expert testimony at all, this, I believe, is where the Minnesota Supreme Court in Sonogles versus Carlson, 2017, says summary judgment is a blunt instrument. Now, that language, blunt instrument, I think a lot of us thought had gone by the wayside when the U.S. Supreme Court decided the trilogy in 1986. The Minnesota Supreme Court has brought it back. Minnesota is not as aggressive as federal courts, basically, in summary judgment. It's a blunt instrument that is inappropriate where reasonable persons might draw different conclusions from the evidence presented. There's tons of evidence here of what happened. Not just our expert testimony, but just, you know, all the stuff that happened. A lot of it's undisputed, but a lot of it's a matter of inferences. Inferences should be decided, the Supreme Court has said, in favor of the non-moving party. Non-moving parties would be ECE and Geist. Circumstantial evidence is decided in favor of the non-moving parties. That's ECE and Geist. In fact, the jigs on evidence say there's no difference between direct and circumstantial evidence. So for summary judgment, for the district court to have ignored undisputed expert testimony, which concludes that one way breached the standard of care in all three areas and gives reasons for that without any expert testimony from one way, and where the plain evidence shows that the Geist was injured when he was climbing the tree, and there's no dispute it was from that electrical wire. I mean, and it's no dispute that, or at least there's evidence that the branches were too close after 4 years when one way was supposed to use his professional judgment to prune it for 6 years. So we think it's a clear case where summary judgment was improper. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you to both attorneys for your argument and presentation here today. That concludes the oral portion of this court's calendar. We will be in recess.